Welcome to the Data Morgana podcast, the show in which we explore the future of the internet. I'm your host, Julia Jensen. I'm an artist researching the impact of technology on our society, and I'm a data protection ambassador. Data Morgana is an initiative by Public Spaces, a network of civic society organizations reclaiming the internet as a force for the common good. It's 2025. The internet has fallen into the hands of a few big tech companies. Under the promise to make our world better, more fair and efficient, they collect our data on a massive scale. But does this really make our world a better place? Or is it nothing more than an illusion, a data morgana? In this show, we're looking into hopeful initiatives happening around Europe that are shaping a better digital future. Today, I spoke with Ella Jakubowska from EDRI, the European Digital Rights Network. They tirelessly defend fundamental rights in the digital age. Ella is the head of policy with an, I must say, impressive background and expertise in movement building across digital rights issues like biometrics, the AI Act, and CSA regulation. CSA is regulation that is pending in the European Parliament at the moment, and if accepted, that would seriously increase the level of surveillance within the EU. Ella and I spoke about Stop Scanning Me, a campaign and movement to stop this from happening, about surveillance, digital rights, and the safety versus privacy discussion. Hey Ella, welcome to the Data Morgana podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you on our show and to discuss the matter of safety and privacy with you today, or maybe better formulated, safety versus privacy, because that's a common frame being used and apparently a trade-off that we sometimes have to make. A campaign and movement that you've been working on is Stop Scanning Me, and it tries to clarify that discussion between safety and privacy and what's at stake. Can you tell me a little bit about this campaign?
Absolutely. And exactly as you say, what we hear constantly in Brussels with EU lawmakers, but I think also something we hear across EU member states as well, is that we have to choose between our safety and our privacy. That maybe if all of us give up a little bit of our privacy, for example, we might be able to keep children safe online from abuse and predators. But this is a really dangerous narrative, and it's with the purpose of contesting this narrative that our campaign Stop Scanning Me rose up, because we're a group of civil society organizations, activists, children's rights groups working on different intersections of protecting queer young people, young activists, young political voices. And actually, we're all convinced that we can't have safety without privacy. If we can't all be free to message our friends, to organize a protest, or to share information about a crush, if we can't contact our doctor, our lawyer, if we're in a legal situation, all these things, if we can't do them with privacy, with security, knowing that our private lives are protected when we use digital tools, just like they're protected in the so-called physical world, then we're all less safe. And if governments start trying to bring in measures that would, for example, scan people's messages using AI-based tools, which is one of the proposals that was on the table that we've been directly responding to, even if it's with the really important aim of protecting young people online, because that's, of course, vital, the internet does pose risks to young people, but to all of us. And we particularly see queer people, people of color, migrants, women politicians, human rights defenders, black women, you know, lots of groups of people are particularly at risk of this harm. But to think that we can insert an AI tool into people's conversations and somehow we'll be more safe is ludicrous. And even more, even on a bigger scale, what some lawmakers have wanted to do is to weaken the fundamental security of our private messages, inserting a back door so that every time you send a message, there's a possibility that Google or Meta or a police officer is lurking there in your private messages. The whole premise that we're safer when they do that instead of less safe is something that we've really tried to raise awareness about and that has been at the core of our whole campaign of actually listening to evidence, listening to cybersecurity expertise, technology experts, human rights experts, and of course, child rights and child protection experts, so that we can have holistic EU solutions to these genuine problems, and not lawmakers who don't really understand tech, who are trying to show their voters that they're doing something, that they're hard on crime, and ultimately actually making everybody less safe and putting everybody at risk as a result.
Right. That sounds really, really worrying. And also, there's a lot to unpack there. Like, I'm super curious to find out, is this actually plausible? Does this work? Do people, like, are children safer with these regulations? But let's maybe unpack a little bit on how, like, this bill, because there is a bill proposed within the EU, right, to see as a regulation that is currently on the table, which will make all of this happen. What's the current state of this?
Exactly. So it's a proposal that's been on the table for several years. It was infamously put forward by former EU Home Affairs Commissioner Ylva Johansson, who received a lot of criticism, actually, for completely not understanding technology. She put forward this proposal, and the whole premise of the proposal was, we can safely scan all of your private messages, and so long as you're not doing anything wrong, nothing will happen to you. But if you're a criminal, then these systems will flag you, and you know, then the police can intervene. Sounds brilliant, right? If we could genuinely have a system that's not going to be intrusive, that's going to work, that can reliably distinguish between a criminal and a legitimate, innocent person, great. Obviously, that is not what actually happens. And one of the things that I said to the commission at the time was, even back then when they were putting forward this proposal, my partner's Google Photos, because I don't use Google Photos, and I'd recommend to all listeners not to use them. I'm still lobbying my own partner not to use Google Photos. Google Photos came up with a collage called The Kitty Chronicles, right? And so they scanned her photos and assessed that there were a load of photos of cats that they'd brought together into this one video that they showed her. And the soundtrack was meow, meow, meow. You know, it was all about, this is a video of cats based on your cat photos. These were photos of our dog. We have quite a large dog, a dog that any 3-year-old on the street, you could show them a picture and they would tell you that is a picture of a dog. But these AI systems, they are so deeply flawed that even the most simple thing that almost any human can do of knowing the difference between a cat and a dog, they can make these enormous errors when they're told to scan content and start flagging what content might be. And yet, this is the idea that they had behind this whole proposal, that the EU would then start using AI filters to scan every message potentially that gets sent, and say
and
whether
or not.
And
be combined with like a whole data set and your secret database to combine to search for profiles, to search for certain red flags maybe, or?
Yeah, so there's different ways that they propose to do it. They want to use databases, some of which already exist, and they would match it against known abuse images, which is something that can be done more technically feasibly than looking for just, look for evidence of a child being harmed. And we actually know that some governments or some police forces have secretly been trying to do this. The Irish government, for example, for many years, were using AI filters to try and spot child abuse material with an enormous error rate. This system was just not accurate. And an NGO called the Irish Council for Civil Liberties in Ireland got information about the Irish police trying this. And what they found was that it was pictures of people's kids in the bath. You know, grandma has taken a photo of the kids playing with their ducks in the bath, or children on a beach with their parents having a family photo, or consensual adult imagery. You know, people in their 20s, 30s and above who were sending nude selfies to their partners, completely consensually, no leakage of any information. All of these images, these types of content, were being reported to police and held in a database with a flag of potential child sexual abuser from the person who sent the images. And yet, despite this, despite us knowing that these systems are deeply flawed, they wanted in this proposal to be scanning potentially all of our messages to look for these things, including breaking encryption to do so. Because if you use a secure message service, they can't scan your message unless they weaken it first and build a backdoor into it. And so as part of the digital rights community, when this proposal came out, we were in uproar. We knew that this technically, that the filters were faulty, that it would compromise digital security by building a backdoor into our messages. We knew that the proposal wasn't based on evidence, that there were lobby issues with some of the companies that would profit from selling this tech, including a company owned by Ashton Kutcher, the now discredited Hollywood actor.
But I think there you also touched on a very interesting point, because especially in this very uprooting, well, political and geopolitical times, especially now, it's very interesting in this debate where people say like, oh, I don't care if anything to hide, but you also do not know what you have to hide or you want to hide tomorrow, because it can be that something that is legal today is illegal tomorrow. I try to always explain this by, for example, I'm involved with several class action lawsuits, for example, one against X or before Twitter. And they track a lot of information from period tracker applications, which is commonly used by women just for the convenience or to help them with their health. But like this information about menstruation, it says something about the vulnerability of certain targeted advertisements. It can also infect your possibility for jobs, you know, where recruiters can see like, hey, this person just had a kid or wants to become pregnant. So it might be not great to hire that person, which is discriminatory. But also looking at the states, where the legislation on abortion and the bills there completely changed almost, well, very rapidly, there are people and women were actually in danger because of these applications, because pro-life activists will combine these data sets with, for example, birth registers. And that actually, that is something that's actually happening already, which is crazy, right? Like, how can you say then this is safety versus privacy? You know, like you say in the beginning, you can't be safe without privacy or data protection or this fundamental human rights.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think the reproductive healthcare point is really vital here, because we look at countries like Poland and Hungary, that if this law were to be passed, and luckily so far it hasn't been, it's actually stuck in the legislative process, because fortunately for now, enough lawmakers have realized this is not a good idea. And this is not lawful. This is mass surveillance as well. It goes against the premise that you need to have a suspicion that someone's done something wrong before you are accessing their private communications, just like police can't go into your house unless they have a warrant. It's a fundamental underpinning of checks and balances in a democratic society. So when we have countries like Poland and Hungary that are cracking down on reproductive healthcare, on queer rights, the idea that we'd be giving them a backdoor into our private communications, it's not about not having something to hide. It's about having lots to protect. And I think a really good example of what could foreseeably happen if this law were passed is that we know that many AI systems will censor or kind of overflag queer content. Queer content is often, because of how these things have been trained, because of stigma in society, queer content can be seen as overtly sexualized when it's not. It can, you know, there have been, you know, there's a whole history of queer people being accused of being abusers with no basis, you know. And when we have systems that are trained on this, on society, which is how AI works, it's very foreseeable that if these systems were implemented, they would overflag queer content, so legitimate, consensual, not abuse material. And what you would then have is, if a queer teenager in Hungary shares some content with their friend, or, you know, even if they share a topless selfie with their partner, that would systematically be forwarded to the platform, who has to look at it, review it, and then is legally obligated to forward it to the police. And then you've got the Hungarian police, who are known to be anti-LGBT, looking at these nude images of our teenagers and then going and investigating them, knocking on their door. Mm. The idea that we're safer when our teenagers and adults' consensual sexual self-exploration is being constantly monitored by an AI system which forwards it to the police.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wild when you think about it in those terms and what's at stake for regular people.
Yeah. What are the chances that this bill will pass?
We are working really, really hard with a huge range of NGOs, lawyers, activists, child digital rights groups, and cybersecurity experts to try to make sure that in this format it never passes. Mm. And even recently, the government of France in a closed-door meeting suggested maybe it should be withdrawn, which is what we have said from the very beginning. It's a really poor piece of law, aside from anything else. Mm. However, it's so politicized, and we'll see some governments like Ireland, like Spain, where they've had child abuse scandals, and they're, for them, seeming like they're being tough on child abuse, even though we all know this law isn't going to work, it isn't actually going to protect children. It's still possible that it could go ahead, but I'm reassured at least that for now there's still a strong critical mass pointing out this is not compatible with the EU legal framework, and the Dutch government have been fairly good on this. I will say.
Yeah, but it's such a sensitive topic, and it's also something like you can't be against, you know, fighting child abuse. That's just something that you can't be against of. And that's, they try to frame it, I guess, in a way that if you vote against this bill, that it will be tied there as well. But it's completely different. But I think it also has to do with, for example, the pro-life movement, right? As we already mentioned, or as I just already mentioned, like you can't be against pro-life because that's something that is so essential. But then they countered with pro-choice, which was the best possible way to actually bend the narrative. And I think something here is very much needed as well, because I feel like when we keep on talking about privacy in this matter, it's so hard for people to understand what privacy then really means, what is at stake, you know? It's our freedom, democracy, autonomy, what you say, like the safety of people as well. Yeah.
It's hard. It's never been easy to be a privacy advocate, and I'm sure you've felt that too, but I feel like now it's even harder than ever, because some of the things that we relied on in the past, we knew that a majority of lawmakers would listen when we had democracy arguments, human rights arguments, that these were things that they could get behind. Mm-hmm. Now, I go to the European Parliament and there's not a majority for these fundamental parts of our society. And unless you're saying we need to crack down and do whatever we can to protect children, or if you're saying something horrible and hostile and punitive about EU borders and migration, most of them don't want to listen to you at all. So it's a really hard climate.
Yeah. Has a bill like this or a system like this to centrally monitor all phones and platforms and to combine that to data sets and databases, has a system like this ever been seen before worldwide? Like, is this been practiced?
There have been attempts, and actually there is an EU law that's in force at the moment that allows companies, like big tech companies, to do this sort of scanning if they choose to. It's a really weak law because it doesn't actually give them a legal basis for doing this, because it's not legal to do general monitoring of people's private chats. So we kind of refer to that as chat control one, whereas now what we're fighting is chat control two. But the good thing is they can't be forced to scan people's messages under that chat control one bill. And that means they can't be forced to do it when it's a secure system.
Okay.
But interestingly, Apple tried a few years ago. They wanted to become the first company to show that you can scan private encrypted messages. And I think they managed a week and a half before they had to pull the system because it didn't work. It was hugely vulnerable.
Oh,
it was really dangerous. Mm-hmm. They thought they were going to be the ones rocking up saying, look, we've cracked it. We can make everyone happy. We can give you safety. We can give you privacy. And actually they proved the complete opposite. And as I'm saying it, I'm now wondering, were they doing a really clever technique to actually try and show that it didn't work? Who knows if they were playing the long game? But we have technologists around the world. There is absolute consensus that if you want to have what we call an end-to-end encrypted message. So a message where only the sender and the recipient or recipients can see it. There's no eyes from Meta or police or anyone else anywhere in that chain.
Yeah.
If you want to build in a mechanism so that somebody else gets that information, there is no cybersecurity technique in the world that can keep that message chain safe then if you are bringing in a third party. You're building in spyware. And in a time where we've got geopolitical threats from Russia, from China, from the US, the idea that we'd build a vulnerability into all of our protected private messages, you know, as somebody who, the privacy that I have when I send a message to a journalist, to a politician, whoever it might be, the idea that I can do it privately, that keeps me safe. That's
yeah, exactly, because that's also
it's
required to do your job properly and to make sure that journalists and people in this field can do it. So that may be so many things to want to ask you still. Maybe let's talk a little bit about the European Digital Rights Network, because that's the organization behind this campaign. This is the organization you work for. What is this network?
Yeah, so we're one of the number of organizations behind the Stop Scanning Me campaign, and we are Europe's biggest network of digital human rights groups. So for us, that means we work across laws, policies, and practices at EU level, but also across European countries to make sure that people's human rights, often privacy and data protection, but absolutely not exclusively those.
Yeah.
You know, also rights to non-discrimination, freedom of information, freedom of expression, and really all other rights, because in this day and age, your social rights, your education, your benefits, everything
entangled.
Is connected.
Yeah.
And so we fight to make sure that people can have their privacy, their presumption of innocence, their equality rights, all their rights protected at any point where they're interfacing with digital tech data. So we're a network of over 50 not-for-profit groups joining together, because of course we're stronger together when we have this network, and we work with decision makers, with other NGOs across fields. Most recently, we've been collaborating with environmental justice groups, because that's a huge issue in the tech space. You know, this this impulse for more AI everything and AI toothbrushes and AI benefits and all the ludicrous stuff that's having a huge climate impact. So we're trying to really think about the big picture about how do we genuinely keep people safe in the digital age, and how do we use evidence and technical reality to guide the work that we do, because that's something that politicians are not always super at doing.
Yeah, no, amazing. Amazing work. And also I really enjoy you. I really enjoy hearing you say that it's about human rights, because often people, I think, tend to think when you talk about human rights, especially concerning to technology, it's about mines and digging up maybe materials, you know, to build phones and slavery in that business. But it's so much more, because everything in here, especially in Europe, it is basic human rights, what we're talking about, having privacy, having data protection, having autonomy and democracy and freedom. And all that is at the stake. So do you think that there is a moment that we do have to choose? And I think also, like looking back at, for example, the COVID pandemic, where the same narrative was posed, but then privacy versus healthy. Maybe now we're entering a sphere where they will say privacy versus intelligence, you know, because of AI and all the chatbots that we're constantly interacting with, which is also a high risk and problem for privacy concerns. How do you see this play out?
It's tough, and there's a real vibe that I feel in my day-to-day work of lawmakers acting as if you're unsophisticated or backwards if you're not using AI tools in everything that you're doing.
Which is weird, because it's so dangerous to talk about your work with ChatGPT, for example.
I know, and the type of errors that we're seeing. One of our members in Austria have been leading a complaint on behalf of an individual who tried asking, I think it was ChatGPT, or it was one of the generative AI systems, you know, this is my name, who am I? And it came up with a whole lot of stuff about this person being a convicted murderer serving jail time. Completely not true. You know, just, we have no idea where it got this idea from. But, you know, these systems are deeply fallible. Mm-hmm. They embed discrimination. They embed corporate power. You know, mm-hmm. that it's certain mm-hmm. companies mm-hmm. whose AI systems are becoming everywhere. It's a big issue for the artistic industries as well, how their material is being used to train. And yet we see lawmakers just thinking it's the magic solution.
Yeah, even it's climate, the way forward. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like, we don't need to stop exploiting all of the Earth's resources. We need an AI system that's going to tell us how to stop climate change. We already know. We know exactly what we need. We know that we need degrowth. We know that we've got to stop capitalism. Mm. But they just think that some magic AI system is one day going to tell us some amazing thing and then global warming ends.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And also, like, circling back to what we said before, like, this technology mainly also comes from white, cis, high educated men, you know, who are also setting the definitions of success of where these chatbots or where, you know, these databases are searching for, which is also, of course, very problematic and also very dangerous for people who are not that, because that's the point of perspective. And how do you see, because it's often said that, for example, the more we are surveilled, we have to face with chilling effects, with things like the panopticon, where people will behave differently when they know that they might be surveilled as well. Do you see that happening more and more? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, a horrifying example is that the EU passed the AI Act last year that's meant to regulate AI. Mm-hmm. And we called on them to ban public facial recognition. And in the end, they partially banned it. And by only partially banning public facial recognition, it can have a real legitimizing effect on making people think this sort of surveillance is okay, that it's normal. And now, surprise, surprise, the government of Hungary has passed a law to be able to use facial recognition against pride marches. You know, so we're seeing people, you know, a really clear, explicit attempt to suppress people's ability to go and march for queer rights, to express solidarity with queer communities. And it's easy to think also, oh, this is a Hungary problem because Hungary's got a rule of law crisis and democratic backsliding. Mm. But we also saw the French government using these systems massively at the French Olympics, claiming this is going to make us safer. You know, we see Spain has a huge industry developing lots of these kind of surveillance tools. You know, the EU is going for a really permissive approach to public safety. And we've been trying to reframe it and say, well, whose safety are you talking about? Because the more we use algorithmic systems to detect quote unquote abnormal behavior, mm-hmm. the more that anyone that doesn't conform to that is marked out as suspicious in public spaces. Mm-hmm. And so now it's queer people. It's always been people of color, racialized people who you know, have a long history of being marked out by police in public spaces as being wrong, as being suspicious. But it, you know, it's accelerating, and it's going to, you know, we can totally foresee a point if we don't have better enforcement of laws where, you know, we're all thinking, oh, does my backpack appear suspicious? Oh, should I put my hoodie down? Is it weird that I'm wearing sunglasses? Is this, are our AI overlords going to detect that I'm doing something bad? Mm. It sounds like sci-fi, but we've seen these systems rolled out in the EU.
Yeah, no, I think reality is way scarier than science fiction is at the moment. And I think once you, once these systems and networks and infrastructures become visible to you, it's really hard to unsee. Mm. Maybe too, I think we can talk about this for a really long time, but we have to come to an end, unfortunately. But what are you concerned mostly about for the future of privacy?
There's so many things to choose from. Mm.
You can pick a couple. You don't have to.
I think the role of, you know, of big tech companies is super dangerous, not only in terms of what we're seeing them actually do with our data, you know, how they manipulate us, how they try and control the parameters of the world that we see. but also the massive seat that they have at the table when it comes to EU lawmaking. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this more than ever. Right now,
what do you mean? You see lobbying or?
Well, it's more than just lobbying. You look at expert groups that are supposed to support the European Commission in how they monitor and enforce certain laws. Mm. And you have a load of people from companies in these so-called expert groups. Mm. And civil society, we don't even get a seat, or we get a seat, but we're not allowed to talk. We don't get meetings. We've been trying ever since the new European Commission was brought in. We've been trying to get a meeting with the Commissioner for Tech Sovereignty, the Executive Vice President. We are seeing every week she's meeting with all sorts of companies. She's ignored all of our requests to meet with her. We've joined together with other digital rights groups to ask to meet. And the space for civil society, we're not popular. We're not saying the things they want to hear. And so industry is being able to have an enormous outsized role over our democratic processes. And those of us working in the public interest, trying to represent human rights and social justice, barely get a look in. But we are fighting it. Maybe that's the positive way to end it. Lot of us contesting it.
That was what I was just thinking about. Like, yeah, this is all happening. Like, what can we do against this? And also, maybe, well, do you think like there is, like, there's also such a push for, like, you know, from the EU with GDPR and also with a lot of other legislations that recently were implemented, which are great and very, very progressive and very important, but it also puts a lot of individual responsibility on citizens, on people. Where do you see that balance? Do you feel like it's now the courage of politicians, but also of industries to make changes to take that responsibility? Or is it more for people or for societies or for nations to protect?
There's always different, you know, it's always a balance, right? But I think in general, with how sophisticated and deliberately opaque a lot of, like, big tech companies are, a lot of AI systems, we can't rely on people alone to protect themselves. It's great to be savvy. It's great to have some digital literacy, to be aware of the risks.
Yeah. But it requires a lot of understanding and time and effort from people. Yeah.
And if you have to scroll through and, you know, the legitimate interest button, you have to, you know, click 400 of them to say, no, you don't have legitimate interest, or no, you don't have my consent. That's companies trying to make you think that GDPR sucks. You know, they think, they want you to think, oh, it's really hard and complex, but that's actually them not complying. They're not properly informing you. So I think a huge part of it is enforcement. We have rules, but we have companies that don't want to follow the rules or are really naughty about trying to make the rules seem like the rules are the problem. Mm. And then you have a lot of political stakeholders who are saying the rules don't work, let's cut the rules. And that's the complete wrong approach. You know, they are, you're right, we have some of the most progressive rights-based rules for the internet in the world. They're not perfect, but the idea that we would throw them out and trust companies, which is actually what some of the senior bureaucrats in the EU are saying right now, we don't need to force them through regulation. We need to trust them. Mm. We need to trust that they'll do the right thing. Absolutely not. They've had their chance. We've seen you cannot trust Google. You cannot trust Meta. You cannot trust Amazon because everything they do is going to be about ultimately making money for themselves. We need transparency. We need accountability. We need lawmakers who are going to be brave and stand up to them and say, this is not the time to be cutting rules, simplifying, as they call it. We need more protections and we need more enforcement, because otherwise, you know, there are limits to what people can do. At the same time, people mobilizing, people being aware is always going to help contribute to that.
Yeah. Amazing. I hope many people that are listening will be inspired by these final words and also the rest of the conversation. Thank you so much. Truly extraordinary work, and thank you for doing the effort.
Thank you for having me.
Data Morgana is funded by the European Union. Views and opinions expressed are, however, those of the authors only and do not necessarily reflect those of the European Union or the Directorate General for Communications Network Content and Technology. Neither the European Union nor the granting authority can be held responsible for them.